Let's call the meeting to order, the Ways and Means Committee. The presentation today is going to be with Commissioner Hanson, Dr. Stenson, and Mr. Showalter from the, I want to say Finance, but it's now Minnesota Management and Budget, right? And so we'll try to get that into a new mode. Some of us old timers have a little difficult time being retrained.
I do too.
Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Just a second reminder for other people that have joined us to make sure cell phones are turned off so we don't interfere with the electronic communications. This is being televised, and so we don't want that type of static to go out as well. Commissioner, welcome, and we'll just try to have this be your show with you and Dr. Stenson. And members, if we can try to hold our questions as much as possible to the end, unless it's a burning question, if you can write it down. I would really like to have Dr. Stenson and other members be able to get through their entire presentation so we can try to understand the problem and what's facing the legislature. So, Commissioner, welcome. If you can identify yourself for the tape, and we'll let you start off.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to appear today and to talk about the forecast. My name is Tom Hanson. I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Management and Budget Department. For materials, we have provided our book and the summary. And then, Mr. Chairman, do you also have the slide?
We do have the slide presentation, and are you going to be working off of that?
We're going to be working off the slides, that you, the handouts that you have, and I guess as well it will be on the screen in front of you. If you look at the first slide, you will see, and it's no secret, that Minnesota's budget outlook has significantly deteriorated over the course of this biennium. A year and a half ago, we finished the 2007 legislative session. We had a balanced budget, and in the 2008 and 2009, those were the good old days, and we also had a balanced budget in 10 and 11, and it was balanced for inflation. Yesterday, we announced a $426 million deficit for the 2008-2009 biennium. That, the biggest component of that is a $412 million decline in revenues from the February forecast. That's $412 million. There is some minor spending adjustments that are also part of that, but it was mostly a decline in revenues due to the drop in the economy. For 2010-2011, it's a $4.847 billion deficit. That represents a $3.3 billion decline in the 10 and 11 biennium in revenues as we project the economic decline to continue into the next biennium. And then, as expected, when there's a recession, we see the countercyclical effects of spending, predominantly in health and human services, a $580 million increase that Jim Showalter will talk about in a minute. The recession, as we all heard earlier in the week, began in late 2007 and is expected to be longer and deeper than previously expected. It's also important to note that at least 41 other states are experiencing deficits, most in the current budget cycles as well as their upcoming budget cycles. California in particular is $11.2 billion in the hole in the current in their current budget year, and it could very well even be worse when they have their updated forecast. Our friends in Wisconsin are $346 million in the hole in their current year, and $5.4 billion going forward in their upcoming.
Are we asking questions along the way? For example, I'd like to know if he knows the percent of that deficit as opposed to dollar amount. You know, we're at about 13%.
We'll try our best to limit questions at all, but that seems a pertinent one. Do you have the percentage, Commissioner?
I can get it to you, Representative.
Okay.
Hey, Mr. Chair, it'd be nice to have that in all the states so we understand percent-wise where we're at. Are we good, bad, worse, middle, you know?
If you can get that information.
We certainly can do that.
Our fifth panelist can probably do this with NCSL as well.
Yeah.
Commissioner, continue.
All right, at the, look to the second slide. It is, just gives you a pictorial of the problem we are facing. You see the $426 million problem in 8 and 9. You will see that we also have $155 million in our budget reserve and $350 million in our cash flow. You see again the number, the 4847. If you add up the 4847 and the 426, it's a $5.273 billion problem over the next 3 years. And as I said, it is a primarily, as you all saw yesterday, and it's no surprise, primarily an economic story. So I'm going to now turn it over to our state economist, Dr. Tom Stinson.
Dr. Stinson, welcome.
Well,
it's good to see you again.
Yeah, I'm glad you said welcome. Because I'm not sure you're going to want to hear
it. Dr. Stinson, we always want to hear you and the extreme knowledge that you bring and the integrity you bring to the state budgeting process. I'll have to tell you, though, that I was interviewed a little bit on this, and someone asked me, well, you know, what do you know about it? And I said, all I really know is that when the economists talk about this, we know that they're wrong. So, Dr. Stinson, with that, welcome, and we'll turn the show over to you.
Mr. Chairman, the unfortunate problem with your answer is that you didn't specify which direction we're going to be wrong on, and as you'll see, this forecast may already appear to be too optimistic. The National Bureau of Economic Research already has declared...
Can I just have you turn the mic a little bit? There you go. Thank you.
The National Bureau of Economic Research has already declared that we're in a recession. And here you can see where the recession started. And the recession actually started back here at this little dip down. That was the fourth quarter of 2007. This little dip down here. Then we've had two quarters where we had strong, not stronger than expected, but stronger than zero economic growth. This is the third quarter, the period July through September. It was down slightly. This is...
Hey, that's good. There you go. That's
okay.
Fine.
Okay. This is the quarter that we're currently in. And Global Insight, in their November forecast that in this quarter we would have a decline of 3.3% in real GDP growth on an annual basis. Now, I want you to keep that number in mind, that minus 3.3% in mind here, because there'll be a quiz. And then we go to 2.2, then we have another negative quarter. This isn't that the economy is improving. This is that the economy is getting worse at a slower rate. That's what how to interpret this. Okay, then finally growth starts in the fourth quarter of 2010, but it doesn't go up to the normal 3% growth rate that we have. It has a relatively slow path back up to the normal trend rate of growth. So that's what's in the forecast. Now the next slide shows the same graph, except it overlays the February forecast as well. In February, you remember, we were forecasting a recession. Here was the recession, these two little gold bars here. Turned out again that we had stronger than expected growth, but then the gold bars that we were expecting, the stronger growth has disappeared, and unlike the path before where it went right back up and it was a 3% growth, now you can see this long, slow trend back to normal growth in here. If you put this all together, what you end up with is a chart that looks like this. Here was the February, here was the February growth rate that we had there, or the economy in February. Now you can see that the economy deteriorates. It deteriorates further all the way through 2009. Then it starts to grow, but it actually starts to grow at a slower rate. So we're in the budget situation's worst nightmare. You're going from a lower base, and you're growing at a slower rate as well. Just again to put this all into a little bit of context, we've been through recessions before. The recession that we were in before 2001, on an annual basis, this is what happened. We had 0.8% growth in 2001, not 3%, not 4% like we're normally used to, but the economy did grow at 0.8%. In 2008, the year that we're in right now still, the economy is expected to have grown at 1.3%, but in 2009, for the entire year, we're expecting to see a 1% decline in the economy. That's a 1% decline in the total output of things that are produced in the U.S. economy, goods and services that are produced in the U.S. economy. I want to show you a couple of kind of personal, how this affects individuals, and here's how it affects Minnesota and Minnesota jobs in the forecast. What you see is you're going to see a decline in employment. We're going to lose jobs over this period. The job losses started here, and they keep on going. Now they stay at this normal level here up until the first quarter of 2010. But if you look at what happens to the cumulative job loss, we go from a gain of more than 20,000 in the first quarter to a loss of more than 58,000 in the fourth quarter of 2009. And we lose jobs through that period. So that's a total job loss during this recession of about 78,000 jobs. Now, one of the reasons why I was a little bit slow getting here this morning, what did I do with this, is we have some new information. And I've got to find this chart that I...
Is this the one that was released yesterday on jobs?
No, this is the one that was released this morning.
This is
what's happened to U.S. payroll employment. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Can we go in on that at all?
Yeah. Yeah.
Focus in. Does that
make
that
it a little
possible?
Bigger if you can?
Sorry.
I don't know if we have the technology to do that.
I think we do. There's something. Is it Zoom? No, that's lightning and darkening.
There you go.
That's not really helping me either.
There you go. All right.
Now, like,
okay.
These are numbers that were released this morning. These are numbers you'll read about in the paper tomorrow. One number that you see that you'll see in the paper is that 6.7% unemployment as opposed to 6.5%. Okay. That's not the number I want to talk with you about. This is the number I want to talk with you about. We lost 550,000 jobs in the month of November in the U.S. economy. Worse still, the estimates for how many jobs we lost in October and September were also revised down in a negative manner. We added another 240, I think, thousand jobs lost to the job loss total. Now let me tell you what's happened over the last few months. A little bit before the 1st of October, before the October jobs numbers came out. From the start of this recession through September, we had lost 760,000 jobs in 8 months. Now, it sounds like a lot, but in a U.S. economy that has more than 135 million jobs, it's not a huge percentage of the employment or anything like that. In October, the original announcement was that we had lost an additional 240,000 jobs. So we've gone from 760,000 to 1 million jobs lost in 1 month. We'd increased by a third. And August and September had been revised down by 120,000. So we'd gone from 760,000 to 1.128 million at that time in 1 month of jobs lost. Okay. With this announcement, we have gone from 1.128 million to 1.96, I think, million jobs lost since last December. The November change by itself was 50% of the amount of jobs that we had lost between January or December and October. Okay. This is just catastrophic. Remember the number that I told you to think about, this 3.3%? And maybe I told you yesterday that it should be revised down. It was going to be like 5% or something like that, maybe. This is consistent with an 8% decline in GDP. Now, there's no guarantee that this is going to happen. November can be revised up. You know, all these numbers can be revised. But this is just terribly depressing news here on the jobs front. And, you know, there is really no end in sight on this. So that's my uplifting message for you here this morning. Now, yesterday when I...
You are very, very positive from yesterday already.
Yeah. Yesterday I told you things could be worse. They're worse. Yesterday I told you that this was going to be a worse recession than we'd seen other than possibly the twin recessions in the 1980s. Now what that says is that this line is going to go down further, this shaded area is going to go down further, still unlikely to grow any faster coming out, and so we're going to end up even below where we were coming out of the twin recessions of the 1980s.
So to clarify that, Dr. Simpson, you're saying that we will be starting with a lower base as well, is that correct?
Yeah, these jobs numbers just guarantee that we're going to be starting with a lower base.
Okay.
Okay. Here's my only good news for you here. I felt like I was getting too gloomy here. Okay, and here's my only good news for you. We want to zoom in on this because people say, well, are we headed for a depression? And the answer is no, I don't think we're headed for a depression. Here's how bad it got in the depression. This is real GDP. In 1929, it was about $200 billion. By 1932, it was down more than 25% from the prior level. Unemployment rates went from 3% to 25%, and of course that was at a time when there weren't very many dual income households, and so that meant that 25% of the people that had been working as in wage and salary jobs, those households were unemployed. So this is not a depression, but this is going to be the most serious recession that we have had if present trends continue. The most serious recession we've had since World War II. Okay. It's going to have impacts on revenues. the income tax is down, now it's estimated to be down $291 million. The sales tax is down $145 million. The corporate income tax is down $57 million, and other revenues are up $80 million. The unusual thing about this revenue forecast is at this time we still have positive variances in some of these taxes. That this hasn't been something that's been going on. This is something that we expect to show up between now and June. This economic decline has come on so quickly that almost all of the revenue loss that we're expecting is prospective. It is not something that we already can say. We're not seeing this in our revenues. Our revenue collections are down. This is all stuff that's going to happen really starting now over the next 6 or 7 months. Mr. Chairman, you probably remember the difference in the tone at the Council of Economic Advisors meeting between the two meetings and the difference between the October and the November forecast. Well, that's indicative of how fast things have been changing here, how fast and how quickly things have been deteriorating. There was talk in the newspapers yesterday or the day before, I'm not sure, about doing a forecast in September or August or something like that before the November forecast. If we would have done a forecast in August or September, we would have been telling you, yeah, you know, you might have a problem, you know, $100 million, $150 million, something like that. Things have just accelerated and accelerated dramatically since the 1st of October. Global Insight had a forecast at that time that was saying that there'd be a relatively mild, relatively short recession over that period, but it was nothing compared to what they had in their November forecast, and the November forecast will be much more optimistic than their December forecast. Now, hopefully all these things get stopped, but things have been accelerating. The deterioration has been accelerating over time. Let's see where we are here. Oh, this is an example of why the revenue forecast is so negative. This little area here, the economy actually did better than we thought it would, but sales taxes didn't really accelerate or anything like that. And you can see here is again the same pattern of declining, major declines, and then starting out at a lower base, and then once we start growing more slowly than we had in the future. So that's the overall story. The next slide I want to show you is an area of concern. In this forecast, one of the major forces in the income tax for the state is capital gains. In this forecast, we do not have wage income declining in tax year 2008. The loss that we get in the income tax is due to capital gains, it's due to lower interest income, and it's due to lower dividend income.
Doctor, can you repeat that again, please?
Okay. The tax year 2008 tax base declines, but it doesn't decline because of lower wages than we forecast. It declines because capital gains are lower, because interest income is lower, and because dividend income is projected to be lower. And in this forecast, we have projected that capital gains realizations will fall, net capital gains realizations will fall by 30% between 2007 and 2008. Now, that seems like a lot, but if you look back at the previous recession, between 2000 and 2001, what we saw was a 54% decline in realizations. Okay. A lot of states are assuming that we're going to get the same kind of change, the same kind of drop that we got in 2000-2001, and they're forecasting the 50% decline. We don't think we're going to see that, but we could be wrong. And if we're wrong, and this goes from here down to 50% decline, then that's going to cost us money. And it's going to cost us on the order of $200 million if you would have a 50% decline in capital gains.
And just for information, Dr. Stenson, when will those numbers be firmed up? For fiscal year 2009, current...
Unfortunately, we're not going to know the answer to that until after April 15th.
Okay.
And so it will be sometime in May when we have a good feeling as to the answer of that. So what I'm telling you, and I want to be sure that you understand, is that there is downside risk to this forecast, that beyond the February forecast, all the uncertainty is not going to be out of the forecast by the time we do the February forecast. And this capital gains issue is an important issue. It's a huge source of uncertainty. And if it breaks the wrong way, the state would face very difficult financial problems right at the end of the biennium if the state doesn't have a sufficient reserve of some sort to deal with that problem. Now, one other point about capital gains is this spike up here. And people might say, well, why is that going on? And the answer to that is that under existing federal law, the special rate on capital gains goes from 15% to 20% at the end of the 2010 tax year. We expect that people will be astute enough to say, wait a minute, if I was going to sell my stock on January 15th, I'm going to have to pay a 20% tax, but if I sell it on December 17th, I can pay a 15% tax. I think I'm going to sell it. And so that pushes realizations from 2011 into 2010. It gives us a boost in 2010, but of course it takes away from tax year 2011. These are tax years, not fiscal years. In fiscal years, it gives us a boost in tax in fiscal year 2011 and takes away from fiscal year 2012. Okay. What happens if the president decides to extend the special treatment of capital gains for another year? Then this bar gets chopped off. It costs us somewhere in the order of $200 to $300 million. So that's another piece of uncertainty. This forecast is done under current law, of course. If the president were to decide he wanted to increase the capital gains tax rate, then there would be more transfer from 2011 into 2010. So one of these things that goes on. Anyway, let me bring this to a close with the forecast for 2010-2011 revenues. They're down $3.3 billion from forecast. In the November 2002 forecast, which set the tone for the fiscal year 4 and 5 problems that the legislature had to deal with, the total tax decline was about half of that. It was a $1.6 billion. Income taxes alone are down by more than the problem that the entire revenue problem in the 2004-2005 biennium, and the income taxes would be down even more without the special the change in treatment of capital gains. Sales taxes are down $826 million, 8.7%. We believe that because of the nature, the changing nature of the consuming public, that we are not going to see the ramp up in consumption after this recession, that people are going to be continuing to increase their savings rather than rushing out and buying more consumer goods after the recession is over, and so that hurts the sales tax receipts. Corporate income taxes are down $640 million because of the extended recession, because of loss carry forward. Motor vehicle taxes down 9%, but it doesn't turn out to be very much money because of the constitutionally mandated phase out of the general fund receipts from that. Other revenues down $97 million again. So the bottom line is that we have reduced the revenues going into the forecast for 2010-2011 by $3.3 billion from end of session estimation.
If you look at the next chart, this just again summarizes the 2010-2011 problem. We show you the percentage decline in revenues from the last forecast, 9.4%, that the 3321, and the 1.6% increase in spending over the last forecast, $580 million. And then you add that to the 946, and that's how you get the 4847. And we've just had the economic piece and the how it has impacted revenues. Jim Showalter will now walk through the expenditure side of the forecast.
Welcome, Commissioner Showalter. Can you identify yourself for the tape, please?
Certainly. My name is Jim Showalter. I'm the State Budget Director. And my comments on the spending side will be relatively brief. As the Commissioner mentioned, there's $580 million of change in the forecast on the spending side. Much of that, as you would expect, is tied to the economic factors that Dr. Stinson has been discussing. We see significant increases in our medical assistance enrollment for families and children, as well as for general assistance medical care, two portions of our health care programs that are more targeted towards economically sensitive populations. There are some other underlying increases that were already assumed in the end of session figures. Those are reflected here in the November forecast. In addition to that, you are seeing some small increases in debt service, property tax aids and credits, and small decreases in the population in K-12 student estimates. All in all, about $400 million of that $580 million change is, as I say, reflected and based upon some of the changes in the economic assumptions that we built into the enrollment numbers for health care. Beyond that, there are a couple of factors for the budget, a broader budget that I mentioned yesterday. I'd just like to bring up again for the committee's consideration, and that is in other funds. We are preparing statements for non-general funds at this moment. Hope to get that information to you probably by mid to late next week. Some preliminary information that we have on the Trunk Highway Fund suggests that the federal revenues due to advanced construction and the types of projects that went out, the federal revenues in that fund will be down significantly. We're also seeing, of course, lower MVEST revenues, lower gas tax revenues. So there will be a small deficit in the current year and roughly a $49 million gap in 2011 in that fund.
Just may I interrupt? You are going to give us a transportation forecast. Probably not you, but the Transportation Department. I think it's scheduled for next week?
Monday.
But next Monday, okay.
Very good.
We'll have that in a more detailed fashion.
Great. Another fund that you typically have questions with is the Healthcare Access Fund, which supports Minnesota Care and public healthcare access activities. That fund saw an increase in enrollment, but it also saw a decrease in obligations due to some federal determinations, which shifted some costs out of the Healthcare Access Fund into the Medical Assistance Program. on net, the balance of that fund is relatively similar to what you saw in 2011, at the end of session. In 2011, it's $188 million. The last point for your consideration is debt service. You see slightly increased debt service costs here. But what more significantly is happening is a decrease in revenues. And when we talk about debt service and debt capacity, we typically talk about one of our guidelines of the 3% guideline of debt service to non-dedicated general fund revenues. Because of the decline in revenues that we're forecasting in this November forecast, the debt, the affordability number rises. So even though no more debt has been issued, right now we're estimating that the debt capacity of the state is at 3.37% based on this forecast. And even if no bonding were issued, that would be at about 3.3%. We'll certainly be talking with you more about the details of those assumptions and what's baked into that, but wanted to let you know of that issue as well. With that, I will turn it back over to Commissioner Hansen to look at wrap up the budget outlook.
So falling revenues and higher spending drive our overall budget outlook. On this chart, we apply the biennium over biennium percentages. You will see that we, from 8 and 9 to 10 and 11, we experience a 1.8% drop in revenues and a 6.1% increase in expenditures in this forecast. Key and some of the larger percentage increases in this forecast, almost 24% increase in debt service, primarily due to the size of the bonding bills over the last few years. We also are, in general fund, health and human services spending, almost 21.3%, and then the property tax aids and credits are going up 8%. And then just a few other pieces of information I know you're probably going to be interested in, the Clean Waters, Wildlife, Cultural Heritage, and Natural Areas Amendment, Constitutional Amendment. We're projecting with the sales tax $242 million in 2010 and $252 in 2011. And then the other piece that I wanted to inform you of, and it's located in the an analysis of this in the larger book, the maintenance of effort issue that arose at the end of the last legislative session. In the tax bill, in the waning hours of the legislative session contained language that suspended the county's maintenance of effort. In this forecast, we assume that that language will be repealed in this legislative session. If it is not, and counties take advantage of that language, the forecast says, and this is, we're basing this on DHS estimates, that you would add about another $200 million. And then with, Jim, if you can put the next slide, this forecast, and this is our final slide, Mr. Chairman, before we open it up to questions, you will see our first glimpse at 2012-2013. You will see a 4.604 shortfall, and then you will see our inflation estimates for the 10 and 11 biennium and the 12 and 13 biennium. And you will see 10 and 11 is significantly reduced because of the CPI significantly going down since the last forecast. Mr. Chairman, with that, the three of us will be available to your questions and the members' questions.
Before we start questions, thank you very much for the presentation and the information, although it wasn't, but the information all of us liked. We have to accept these particular realities. Representative Cole.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Stinson, just a question about the employment numbers that were released this morning that you talked a little bit about. Is there any information as to, I know Citigroup let go 53,000 people. So is there any information about whether these job losses are coming more disproportionately from large employers or small employers? I mean, here in Minnesota, we had Denny Hecker, who I think who let go of 400 employees or something like that. Is there anything in terms of the size of the employer, any conclusions we can draw or any information you can provide us?
Dr. Simpson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Coles, I haven't had a chance to look at this in any detail. I skimmed over the report, but I don't remember anything that said it was large employers versus small employers, and frankly, I was trying to put together this graph, and I can't even recall the breakout between how much was in the financial industry and how much was manufacturing and how much was construction and things like that. You know, it's in the report, though. If you go to the BLS site on the web, you can find all the information, and so it's something that you can find.
Thank you, Dr. Simpson. That was my second question, if you had any information about where the job losses were coming from, but that's all I have, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Members, before we have other questions, to Representative Junkie's question on the percentage, this is a report that was posted yesterday on the web. It's an NCFL report. It's longer than this, but the first 15-16 pages kind of answers the questions on that you had, Representative Junkie, on percentage from different states. There is a whole bunch of other information that's comparing the states in the nation with this report. I think it's like 50-some pages long, and you might want to go to your email. I think we have posted a link to this on everyone's email, and you can run it off or look for more detail for this. This was as of about 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon, so they are updating it continuously. Representative Junkie.
And thank you. And it does show this year's, and I assume there'll be projected years eventually with NCSL numbers too, or maybe it's in the longer
version. It's in the longer version. I just didn't.
And I appreciate it. Again, Minnesota, while we're negative, it doesn't look as bad when you compare to other states on the current year, and I haven't seen the out years yet, and that's it's a point of interest. Mr. Chair, thank you, and I have a couple questions. First one is on current revenues. As you look at the shortfall, you're projecting about a third of that 412 is sales tax shortages, and of course your predictions were being made as we entered the holiday shopping season. You know, we all heard that revenues and Black Friday was going to be a disaster, et cetera, et cetera. And as you were putting these numbers together, I believe it was reported that nationwide Black Friday saw an increase of 7% compared to the previous year in sales. Now, that's probably not profits, but sales were there. How quick will we see updated numbers and have a realization for this year, and particularly our holiday sales? You know, I don't know what the Mall of America or what others did on Black Friday, and I suspect you don't yet either, but how quick will we see that and perhaps have an adjustment to this if it was on a positive and we were maybe predicting a negative?
Dr. Stenson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Junkie, in the February forecast, well, in the January economic update, we will report sales tax receipts for the month of December. Okay, but that will just cover, you remember that there's a lag of 1 month between the sale of the good and the remitting of the sales tax receipts to the state. And so we will see November sales tax receipts, or no sales taxes made on November, sales taxes from sales made in the month of November at the end of December, and that'll be reported in the January economic update. The crucial month of December, though, won't be, those receipts won't be remitted until the end of January, but they will be incorporated in the February forecast. And so that's one of the pieces that could break in our way on in the February forecast. It could be, Christmas could be better than we have. Now, one thing that I have to do is always give my annual urge for people to buy taxable items. Don't buy clothing. Buy taxable items.
Don't use the internet.
Mr. Chair, the other question I'd have is, and you don't put it in your abbreviated, I wondered if it's in your longer report, can we take a look out and see how different sectors are doing in the state? And a couple examples, agriculture. 40% of our economy in western Minnesota is agriculture, which has done fairly well over the last couple of years. Now this year, As you know, commodity prices have dipped. Most of our producers out there have their grain in their bins. They haven't sold it. And I don't know what your predictions are based on in that large Minnesota sector, and if you predict when those grain sales may clear and that money flow through our communities, because it's not flowing through there right now. People are sitting on their crops this year. And I wondered if you look specifically at agriculture. Another one in the state that I suspect, I wonder if it's still strong and growing, is the medical and the medicine. I mean, people still go to the doctor's office still, and we have some large medical sectors here. I'm wondering if you can differentiate for us, maybe not today, but at least in the future, short future, which sectors are strong that we need to keep an eye on and keep them strong as we try and generate out of this, and what sectors may be hurting. You know, we obviously know that construction around the state is hurting. There are less architects working, less whatever. But we know that mining saw a little funk here now with the worldwide drop in construction and auto sales and other things. But up till, you know, this summer, mining was doing very well. And then do you break out geographically would be my second part of that. So we look at western Minnesota or southern or northeast, metro, suburban. Do we break down our microeconomies at all in the state to take a look out and see where we're doing a good job or where we're not doing so good and where we need to focus resources?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Duncan, with the answer to your second question first, our job is to forecast state revenues, and so we look at the state as a whole. We don't have separate micro models for the metro area or the Rochester area or non-metro Minnesota or anything like that. With regard to your first question, we publish in the book some pieces of information, but we look at the Minnesota economy on a sector-by-sector basis. If you look at, and I don't know whether this will pick up or not, but here's
on page 28,
page
by the way,
28 of
the big book,
of the
if
big
you have
book.
That in front of you.
Do we have the big book? We don't have it.
They don't have it. It's online.
But it's online.
Yeah.
And you know, here's an example of some of the information that we have there. Mm-hmm. And you can see these are just some of the sectors, education and healthcare. This is what happened to the employment between October of 2007 and October of 2008. It grew by 1.6%. Manufacturing employment statewide fell by 2.7%. Financal activity, 1.5%. Construction down 2.2%. We actually have more information than that, and we have quarter by quarter information in terms of what we're projecting as well in that forecast. If I look here, here's a thing that you probably can't read because it's probably too small. These are just notes that I had for my information, but construction, we've lost 13,000 jobs from the start of 2008. We expect to lose another 7,000 jobs by the end of 2009. Manufacturing, we expect to lose a total of 23,000 jobs between the start of 2008 and now. We have already lost 7,800. We expect to lose another 15,400. The places where there's good news is in the healthcare sector. We expect to gain 15,000. We've only gained 5,000 so far, so there's another 10,000 to gain. And in the finance sector, we expect to gain 700. We've lost 300 so far, so we expect to gain about 1,000. But that's indicative of the kind of detail. We actually have more detail than this. This is just broad, but that's indicative of the kind of detail that we go into.
So, Mr. Chair, just real quick, Dr. Stinson, is that chart available for us to copy?
Yeah, if you want it.
Okay. anybody's interested, we can probably make some copies of it.
Again, I'll quit, but very specifically, do you look at agriculture as a sector anywhere that I can pull out and say, here's how ag is doing in Minnesota? You know, agriculture is about 20% of our GDP in the state, and do you have an ag economist? Do you specifically look at that sector? I mean, you've got Cargill, General Mills, CHS, you've got large agriculture companies as well as obviously the producers and processors out there. Do we pull that out anywhere in our budgets in the past or
Dr. Stinson?
Okay, Mr. Chairman, Representative Junkie. We look at it in a number of different ways. First of all, one of the sectors that we model explicitly is food and food manufacturing and food processing. And so we have an estimate of what's going to happen in that sector in terms of employment and wages in that area. Okay. So that would get the food manufacturers in there. We also have an explicit estimate of farm proprietors' income in there. So both of those that fall in there and are part of personal income, they're not part of wage income or anything like that. Third, because I have a ranch, a wheat ranch in eastern Washington, I pay attention to the agricultural issues that are going on, and I'm well aware of wheat prices in particular, but also fuel and fertilizer prices and what is going on. So this is all incorporated into the forecast. We make an explicit estimate of farm income, changes in farm income as part of the income tax model.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to go back to the jobs for the employment issue and the new information you shared with us this morning. On the news this morning, they were saying that with that new information, that they felt that businesses were moving earlier and more aggressively in adjusting their employment levels than had originally been anticipated. And I'm just curious as to how that then shows up in terms of your projections on into the future. Does that mean it's going to be, in the end, even deeper than we anticipated, or is it a situation where it's deeper sooner, but we'll be coming back a little bit earlier as well?
Dr. Stinson?
Being that it's new information, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, one of the things that's in the forecast book is a comparison of what we projected for job growth and for wage and salary income for Minnesota versus what Global Insight is projecting for the U.S. Okay? It's on page 71 of the book. And we can try and show you. Okay.
Dave, hit the brightness would help too a little bit. Thank you.
Okay. If you look at the most important part of the forecast, which is the wage and salary income. We have U.S. wage and salary income. Or Global Insight has U.S. wage and salary income growing a little faster than we have Minnesota wage and salary income in 2008. But most of 2008 is already baked in the cake. And so Global Insight's forecast for wage and salary income growth and our forecast for wage and salary income growth are probably both going to come down a little bit, but ours might not change from 3.4 to 3.3 or something like that. Where it's going to be important is in 2009, and we will have to reassess our models to see. I mean, I know Global Insight's going to be bringing their 1.2 down, but we were more pessimistic than Global Insight was, since we had the luxury of doing this forecast several weeks after they had their forecast out, and also because we have the luxury of having withholding receipts. We know how the withholding tax receipts are going compared to our previous forecast and what's going on. So you can imagine that Global Insight could bring theirs down by to 0.2, and we bring ours down from 0.2 to 0 or something like that. So it's not necessarily a proportionate change in there. If you look here at non-farm employment on a year-over-year basis, Global Insight has a decline of 1.5% in 2009, and since these are year-over-year numbers, it's the average of employment over January, February, March, April, May, and the deterioration, while it's severe in the last 3 months of 2008, you've still got that pretty solid amount in there that's keeping it from driving the average down. The place that it's going to drive the average down is in 2009. So if you look at 2009, they had a decline of 1.5%. We were already a little bit more pessimistic, and so it may be that this isn't going to be as bad a news as you would think if you just extrapolate out, but we do take this into account.
Thank you. Representative Service.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to have a bit of a conversation with Commissioner Hansen. Commissioner, we both have a short-term and a long-term problem before us, and I know that I want to set aside the short-term problem for a second and look at the longer-term problem and kind of the process moving forward. Commissioner, can you kind of update us on the status of developing the governor's budget? I know in previous conversations with you, you started that process. Can you just kind of walk us through what that entails briefly?
Mr. Chairman, Hansen. Representative Sirdut, sure. We are required statutorily to submit a budget to the legislature the 27th of January. What we have done, our process, however, starts in midsummer, in which we send instructions out to our agencies, and they begin writing the narrative and assembling the data that that becomes the budget books. The actual assembling of numbers and proposals for us, and I'll turn it over to Jim here in a minute, usually comes after we find out what the numbers are, which we did yesterday, and we will be working starting soon today through the holidays and probably try and finish the first couple weeks of January. Jim, why don't you go into a little more detail?
Mr. Showalter?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative, the budget process started all the way back in last July and August. The first elements actually just got posted onto the web, so that detail of the base budget or the current numbers that you see in this reflected in this forecast for spending obligations or spending activities as shown in the end of session statutes. That information is already on the web. It's being posted for most of the programs, for the forecasted programs. I think that'll be getting out shortly. That includes narrative discussion of what those programs do, as well as numbers to show the types of spending and the activities that are included in that. The next element, which Representative Sirdut asks about, is now that we know that we have a $4.8 billion challenge in 2010 and 11, how do you resolve that? What are the elements? We've been asking agencies to give us their ideas, pointing them in the direction that we know we're going to end up having to make budget reductions one way or another, looking at all our options, and are just starting to organize those and present those to the governor to help help inform and give him context and give him options as to how to put together a solution. It will certainly be a challenging solution. Although the order of magnitude is similar to what we experienced in 2004 and 5, roughly 13.2 to 13.6%. It was 13.6 then, it's 13.2 now. We don't have all the same tools that we had at that point in time. $1 billion tobacco endowment was present then. It is not present now. Our reserve levels are a little bit higher, actually, than they were then. But in terms of spending growth and certainly the duration and the risk in this forecast, there are certainly a lot of things to weigh. We're in that process literally right now.
Mr. Hansen?
Mr. Chair, Representative Sirdut, the time management problem we have is the same people and decision makers that have spent the fall looking at 10 and 11. We're now pivoting to starting to spend a little more time and energy on 8 and 9 than I would really like to at this point. So that probably means we'll be working over the holidays to get everything done.
Commissioner, just a follow-up, Representative Sturgeon.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. The acoustics, I couldn't hear. The budget date, you're assuming that we will be receiving would be January 27th?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
It's a Tuesday.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner Hansen, yesterday I heard a bit from the governor about building his budget from the ground up. And then it was, I believe, intimated, and I want some clarification on this, some discussion about zero-based budgeting. Will the governor be participating in zero-based budgeting in developing this budget?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Sertich, we will, as we go forward. I mean, the governor, I think he said, I was standing there, that his first, you know, he'd start from the bottom up, and his first priority would be veterans and military, second, public safety, third, education, and then he'd work from there. The essence of his comments, I think, are to try to remind everybody that we have $32 billion, and we're going to try to spend and to make the best possible decisions with what we have, rather than wish we had another $3 or $4 billion more. As we look at our, as we discuss internally, Representative Sertich, we, in working with our commissioners and agency staff, we make people justify how they're spending their money and the decisions they make, whether it's the first dollar in or the last dollar in.
And
Mr. Chair, or Representative Sturgeon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. That's good to know. I think it's more clear now that the governor will not be doing that. But you touched on the justifications, the rationales that commissioners and agencies will be giving on you. Director Showalter also talked about the ideas that will be coming forward from agencies, our state agencies, to the governor's office in developing this budget. I think it would be important for us as the legislature to see that work, and it's going to be very important if we're building this budget from the bottom up, from dollar one in. It's going to be important for us to see these ideas that you may or may not use in developing your budget proposal. And Commissioner, I would hope that we would have access to that, and how could we access that information most efficiently, these ideas, these rationales that you may or may not use in developing your budget proposal, so that we can potentially utilize those ideas and develop whether they were meritorious or not for the legislature to consider.
Commissioner Earhart or Commissioner Hansen?
Earhart.
I was just reading Earhart, you're next on the list. Maybe that's a Freudian slip.
I think he's probably available. Mr. Chair, Representative Sertich, you're assuming that the ideas we reject are good ones. I have a couple
Mr.
of...
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Commissioner, I'm not assuming anything. I would like to see whether they are or not. You and I have had a cordial relationship over the years, but I don't automatically assume anything about you, whether you're going to be...
good thing.
Yes, and in all seriousness, in these times, I don't think we throw ideas away or just assume that you'll be picking and choosing what I believe, or maybe the majority of Minnesotans who believe are the best ideas. So I'm not making any assumptions. I think this is a time for all hands on deck, as I think I heard Minority Leader Senjum say, put all the cards on the table. So I'm just asking to see all the ideas. I think we would be better than just maybe yourself and the governor ruling whether these ideas are good or bad, but the public see them and make our decisions for ourselves.
Commissioner Hans.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sertich, I figured you or somebody else would ask that question. And the first thoughts in my head when I thought about it, and I didn't want it to seem to the members of the committee to be too adversarial, but I decided I'd probably say it anyway. This is a body that exempts itself from the Data Practices Act. We are subject to it. This is a body that does not do its budget targets on the floor, but rather in committee, and at least you do it in committee. The Senate does not. You know, the primary, when you set your major decisions, you do it behind closed doors at a closed caucus. I don't see, or the public doesn't see, what Representative Kahn brings forward and ideas that are rejected.
Oh, the public always sees the Representative Kahn.
That's probably the wrong one. So having said all that, I don't think, Representative Sertich, that you're all that pure and preserving. You know, I think you keep your cards as close or closer to the vest generally than the executive branch. Now, as far as the commissioner, as commissioner of management and budget, it is my responsibility to provide you with as much information as we possibly can to help you make your decisions. Whether that will include the ideas we reject or not, I will talk to the governor about it. I think that we need the ability to discuss and reject as we see fit. And I think as the committee processes go forward, you generally, as far as I've seen, get the essence of the ideas anyway from the commissioners.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Sertich.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner Hanson, your critique of the legislature is your own, and if any member of the legislature wishes to choose to change that, they can, and you can certainly offer your suggestions as well. Commissioner, these aren't your state agencies. These are the state agencies of the state of Minnesota. While the commissioners may serve at the pleasure of the governor, they are all of our state agencies, and we certainly do develop and vote and are held accountable at the decisions we make in the legislature, and we do so on the floor with great debate from all sides. So I would hope that you would seriously consider, and the governor would seriously consider, us having access to our state agencies, Minnesotan state agencies, and the ideas of all of the people that work for the state of Minnesota, because they don't just work for you or the governor. They work for all of us. And those ideas, whether you may disagree with them or not choose not to bring them forward, still deserve the sunshine and the light of day for all of us to discuss when we are making our decisions. Mr. Chair and Commissioner Hanson, one last thing that occurred a bit over the last day or so about us rushing to some sort of conclusion on what is one of the largest deficits we've seen, and that we should maybe act sooner rather than later. But I think Mr. Simpson brought up a good point of, if we were to have this budget forecast even a month or so before when we did, we would have not seen the total picture and potentially made some bad decisions. I'm just curious on if we know the date of the February forecast and when we will be receiving that information, as I think it's most appropriate for the legislature to get that revised data before we start making decisions.
Dr. Stinson?
Mr. Chairman, we haven't picked a date for the February forecast, but the way the calendar works out is it will probably be the last Wednesday or the last Thursday, which I think is February 25th or 26th in the month. But physically, we just can't get it done any quicker than that, given the time that the Global Insight February forecast would be available.
Dr. Stinson, to that point a little bit, Global Insights gives us monthly updates, and have they given us a new one just in the last day or so?
Yes.
And can you share that with us as well?
Is it posted
online?
It's not posted online. Because it's proprietary, we can't post it online.
Okay. But is it something that can be shared with members?
More pessimistic, and I can share it with staff.
Okay, very good. Representative Kelleher, did you have a follow-up?
Yes, I did. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think, Commissioner, it's just really important that we do say that in past years, that budget books did contain more information than they contain now about the decision-making process that went into making the choices. Could you confirm that or dispute that for the members of the committee? Because I think that is the sort of level of information we're talking about here.
Mr. Hanson?
Well, I'll make a few comments, Mr. Chair, Madam Speaker, I'll make a few comments and turn it over to Mr. Showalter, but we used to, I think, and when I worked here, we got more information, and I think a lot of it, just by sheer, the sheer volume was not used or not capable of being used in the allotted committee time that you have. If you want to...
Showalter?
Mr. Chair, Madam Speaker, members, in terms of what is presented in the budget book, I've been at the Department of Finance now, Minnesota Management and Budget, for about 14 years. In terms of the format and the information in the budget, there's a couple of major changes. Those are guided through statutory changes over time. But by and large, when I go to old books, much of the same information is there. What I think is always variable is how the quality of the writing, the quality of the analysis, how far into the discussion we get. Depending on the nature of the decision-making process, the amount of time, that can fluctuate over time. But if you look at the displays of information, much of that is very similar year over year. The one key difference, if you pick up a book from 94 or something like that, you'd see an agency request column.
Yes.
If you look closely at it, you'll also note that the governor's recommendation column is the same as the agency request column. I'm not sure if when that switch was made, I think you might have to go further back than 1990 or so before those were any different. But certainly that's been the practice for the last couple of decades.
Mr. Chair.
Speaker, follow up.
Less a question than a commentary. We are expected to be full partners in the decision-making process on a $32 to $35 billion budget. And I would submit to all of you that we are dealing with only a portion of the information we need to make those decisions, whereas the executive branch often has more access to that information, no matter who the chief executive is. And I think that frankly does a disservice to the public. So that is my commentary on it. I think that many members are in support of that, and we could get cute about data practices and everything else. I'm going to refrain from that sort of commentary because I think there's been a lot of documentation about what isn't released on the chief executive side of things. So I think we need to just really think about this. If we were running a business and what sort of information we would want about what the recommendations are, we would expect all of that to be presented to us in some way. And I don't subscribe to the theory that public service is business, but I do think that having information is very important to making educated and thoughtful decisions and helping the public understand what are the decisions before elected representatives. So it's not meant, it supersedes the individuals necessarily sitting in this room as a point about what sorts of information we will have to be able to help in the decision making.
I do have a list that I would like to continue going through if that's possible. Representative Earhart, I called you commissioner because you were on the next list, but we're still wrapped. So. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 8, second slide, bottom slide, you talk about expenditures up $580 million from end of session. And then you mentioned a little further down, debt service increase $45 million. Why would you not have known what the debt service was going to be at the end of session?
Mr. Chair, if I may. Representative, good question. We certainly would have an estimate of what the debt service would be at the end of session. What has changed is the interest environment in which new bonds would be being sold. In addition, more significantly, we tend to get premiums because those bonds are usually priced at a 5% rate. to the extent that the interest rate, the prevailing interest rate, is below that, we would get some upfront payment to buy down the cost so that the effective rate is lower. That isn't expected to happen with upcoming bond sales, so you're seeing some change here. Certainly, this is one of those questions that Assistant Commissioner Kathy Cardell can go into much more explanation of what the assumptions are in the debt service model. But the general answer to your question, Representative, is the interest rate environment that we'd be looking at.
May I interrupt, Commissioner Walter? You had scheduled a bond sale in November, I believe it was, and that was postponed until January. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And you said at the time, and I was not concerned about your cash flow at the time, to keep projects going.
Yeah.
You have all scheduled, I remember what the number was, something, is it 40? 400 million. I know there was a 4 in there. I didn't know exactly how many more zeros. In January. Do you continue to want to be able to sell those? And if you do need to postpone it, will that then affect the ability for us to continue the capital improvement projects and the jobs that they create?
Mr. Chair, members, Assistant Commissioner Cardell is planning on a bond sale in January. We'll be watching the market very closely over the next couple of weeks, and we'll make a final determination once we see whether some large bond issuances go through and what kind of interest rates they are priced at. To date, members, the competitive process which the Minnesota law requires hasn't been a functioning market. For the last several months, we haven't been able to put large bond issuances out there, or at least there haven't been large bond issuances out there. Mm-hmm. We haven't been so desperate as to want to go out there and pay a premium on the interest rates. So a management decision was made to hold back, to let the market stabilize, so that when we do go into the market, we could get a better price for our debt. We will be watching that market very closely over the next few weeks, and we'll certainly have more information in the next couple of weeks.
Well, I think Representative Hausman and myself and others are concerned about the ability of us to continue with capital improvement projects that are creating the jobs that we need to create. And I'll repeat again, I wasn't too concerned about the November cancellation or postponement because of cash flow, but you didn't answer the question if that should happen in January. Is cash flow available for continuation of the planned capital improvement projects and those related jobs?
Yeah.
Or if you don't know that information, will you get that to us in a timely fashion?
Mr. Chair, we certainly would. We are right now assuming that they will be done in January. If for some reason we chose not to make those bond issuances at that point in time, we would certainly have a discussion about where we are in our cash position, what are our options for either getting to market in other ways or doing a later date for those bond sales. At this point in time, our cash position is solid. We expect that we should be in solid position through fiscal 9. Although, as Dr. Stinson has been talking about, revenues are shaky. But right now, the cash position that we are in is very similar to the number that you've seen before, and we will reach a low point probably in the April-May timeline with it coming back up in June.
Okay. Representative,
talk with you and Representative Hausman before we make any decisions on our on the bond sale for January.
Very good. Representative Ehrlich.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Hanson, assuming that you sort of speak for the administration, do you believe that the 2010-2011 shortfall can be satisfied without a tax increase?
Mr. Hanson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, while I sort of, as of today, speak for the administration and quoting Governor Pawlenty at his press conference yesterday, He does plan on solving the 10 and 11 deficit without raising taxes.
Thank you.
Okay, I have on the list Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I guess looking at this information on the state budget update on page 13, where Minnesota is listed as the percent, the 426.
That's the NCSL report?
The NCSL report. Whereas the 426 deficit budget gap that we're looking at, and for Minnesota that's listed as 1.2%, I'm assuming that 1.2% is on the total budget and it's not the remaining unexpended budget for the rest of the budget year. If that number was on the remaining unexpended budget, it would look significantly worse than the 1.2%.
Well, I don't know. I haven't had a chance to read that report fully, NCSL report. I opened it up a little bit yesterday on the emails, but...
I'm impressed that it's in there, and by our calculation, the 426 was 2.4% of 09 spending, so I'm not quite sure.
That might be a biennial.
It is possible that it's a biennial. It doesn't.
I think what's interesting, what we need to know about the gap is really the percentage of what's left to spend as opposed to what the percentage of the entire budget for the period is. And so I was just asking what those columns
actually, if
were,
that's so. A biennial number, since we have about 6 months left in this biennium, you can almost multiply it by four. Okay, Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have two questions. The first relates to the repealing the repeal of the maintenance of effort issue. It's on page 44 of the big book. And we had Commissioner Hansen, you and I had a discussion about this at the end of session, and I had a different recommendation than what was actually done. I spent some time with the Dakota County Commissioners yesterday, and in your book you state that if the repeal is not repealed, it could be up to $200 million in a greater deficit for the state. My question is how did you get to that number? Is that the counties were saying that figure is only if the counties failed to make investments in those areas at all? And I felt like I was getting different information than the issue as I understood it. Are there federal funds at risk that would contribute to this deficit if maintenance of effort is not continued? Can you talk a little bit about that issue?
Is that to Commissioner Hansen?
Yes. Yeah.
Commissioner Hansen?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, the $200 million figure is what we received from DHS. It represents our best estimate if every county failed to make their match. And these programs, and the state would have to pick up the cost, because then we wouldn't want to lose additional money from it, you know, by losing any federal money by not providing the required match. You'll notice there's another 300 in the second paragraph. You have it open to page 44. There's another $300 million that would not impact our state budget and don't have the federal match requirements.
Mr. Chair, and I don't know if this is for the speaker or for the commissioner, within the deal, the quote-unquote letter that everybody signed or whatever, is the repeal of the maintenance of effort language only that related to the those things that would have exposure to the state, or all of them? I mean, is all the language going away in this deal, or...
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, my recollection of this from the conversations is that because that item was never agreed upon by the parties involved, in fact, I think there's somewhat sketchy detail about how it actually appeared in a bill, that all of it goes. Now, does it mean that there will not be further conversations with counties about maintenance of effort issues. I do not believe that is the case. I think there's going to be conversation. I think you're going to see conversation very quickly coming from the majority leader of the Senate, myself, and the governor towards counties about this issue. And so I don't think it means that we are done with this conversation, but it does not mean it's only the items that would expose the state to further budgetary pressure. However, it really had to do with the process around an item that was never raised, and probably the tax chair and the commissioner could both fill in detail on that.
And I appreciate that clarification, because as I listened to the county side of the story yesterday, I was kind of shaking my head, feeling like I'd done the Alice in Wonderland thing, because it wasn't exactly as I recalled.
I felt that way about that whole issue ever since it happened.
Okay, well, I appreciate the clarification on that. And then I listened carefully to Representative Sirdic's comments about waiting for the February forecast, but I'd like some information on the $426 million and what delay. My understanding is there's a lot of money that's scheduled to go out to counties and cities, et cetera, at the end of December, and my understanding is there was a breakfast, and I'm just wondering if all parties have agreed to move as swiftly as possible to try and address some structural spending reductions to address the $426 million. And is it true that we're spending $2 million more a day than we're bringing in at this point?
I don't know about that 2 million figure, so you'll have to talk about that, Commissioner. I can tell you from the breakfast that we had this morning, the Senate Majority Leader, myself, and the Governor, that I think maybe we are misreading what Representative Sirdic's comments are there, because I think there's absolute commitment to swift movement on the short-term problem here. You are, and I have said this to the press, so I don't feel like I am telling you anything new and anything that hasn't been said already. In that meeting, we agreed that there needed to be public process around this. I think you'll see that in the form of information that's going to come from finance and revenue and the agencies around what is unexpended and can be touched. There's a lot of strings attached to certain things out there. With that, you will see a public process beginning hopefully through the finance and ways and means process in the House. I can't speak for what the Senate will do exactly, but I think they're committed to a public process. No matter what the method of reduction is, whether it is agreed upon on allotment, whether it's on allotment, whether it's a bill in the first weeks of the legislative session, I think that we are all very committed to making, at least with the information we have, solving that problem quickly. For every dollar that we can reduce, it saves $3 into the future, and that's very important in this process. And Representative Holberg, I think the other part of this is, I think you are going to see all three of these leaders hopefully lead all of you in a way that maybe hasn't happened in the past about being present with groups who are going to be asked, the representatives of those groups, to do more and to come to the table with ideas. I think this is the whole point. The public needs to understand the very treacherous time we're in economically and what it means. So we are absolutely committed to a quick resolve of that, no matter what format it takes.
The
commissioner might want to add his thoughts, but also I'd like a comment. I've heard we're spending $2 million more a day than we're taking in.
Commissioner?
Is that just a old wives' tale?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, that I think that came up at the Republican briefing yesterday, and I, you know, it sounded
old wives' tale. Then it had to be.
Well, it sounded. I'll verify it for you. I think Marty came up with it. I think it's right, and we'll have to double check.
And Mr. Chair wasn't at that meeting, so.
All right, then Representative Clark?
But if I could comment on...
Commissioner?
At the breakfast, and I was there as well, over the blueberry pancakes. The
I wasn't going to reveal what we had. Make everyone get hungry.
I was
right
concerned
now.
About that one time that the Republican caucus was...
I didn't eat the pineapple.
You did eat
it. I have to tell you that the commissioner and the governor's staff person is there. I did notice they did not eat the pineapple, but I did carefully notice the governor ate the pineapple, so I figured the pineapple is bad. We're all in it.
Well,
together.
For the public that might be watching, that the people got sick on pineapple time.
just to expand on what the speaker just discussed, from the governor's perspective, we talked at the meeting about trying to have a mutual decision-making process as we go forward, and the governor emphasized the need to act quickly, as the longer you wait, the more money gets spent. We agreed to the speaker and the Senate Majority Leader talked about their need to have the need for public process, which we agreed with, and we also talked about providing more information. I know some had been provided to you and Representative Carlson yesterday, but we're now working it down to the agency level, what we have, what's been spent, what's available, and trying to get it, break it down into even smaller layers than that. So we have an informational need right now. And then the other public piece that I'm sending a letter around today invoking the LAC process, which has to be part of this. We'll probably have a LAC meeting next week, which will be the consultative piece regarding the budget reserve, and then we will continue to communicate.
And I think those communications are extremely important, and that information that we've requested is important, and we appreciate very much the forthcoming information, detailed information that's been requested by Representative Carlson and myself in a timely fashion. Thank you for that. I have Representative Clark. I'm sorry, if you were on the list, then it took a while to get
that's
to you.
That's okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just, first a comment and then a question. In looking at both what Representative Junkie and Representative Kahn were referring to, the 1.2% budget gap, I would like to notice that that's just for the 2009 budget gap, but if you look on page 10 of that same document, Minnesota shows up as one of the fifth worst budget gap states. We're 14.7%, so I don't want us to get thinking that we're doing such a great job. It's actually 14.7% projected budget gap in fiscal year 2010, following Arizona, New York, California, Wisconsin. So it's really serious, and I just want to put that forward. But I do have a question around this issue of the options that are being considered as our state agencies come forward and talk about their budget proposals from the governor. One of the things I've been following a lot is the whole housing issue. And there's been a bicameral, bipartisan caucus that's been meeting and talking about these issues of housing for all through the summer and the fall. And, of course, one of the reasons is the incredible problem. People are not only losing jobs, they're losing their houses. We have a huge foreclosure crisis in the state. I was very concerned to hear the governor say, if I understood him right, that there may be some federal dollars that he would not take if they were part of the federal budget coming to Minnesota. And I just want to say, I want to know, and I haven't had a chance to meet with our housing commissioner, I will be, I believe, next week, but also, our Health and Human Services, all of the folks that are coming forward with these budgets, do they have a mandate from the governor not to utilize or look at the incredible resources that the federal government might be bringing in some of these areas? And I just mentioned housing because if that's on the table right now, and there may be other kinds of leveraging of federal dollars, financing that the federal government says, if you do this as a state, this is an incentive that we will follow up with. I want to know if that option is part of what is going to be considered, and if not, why not? And if so, I think that would be very helpful for us to know about.
Commissioner Hanson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, the governor clarified at his press conference yesterday the remarks he made on the phone from earlier in the week. He expressed concern about the level of debt that the federal government is incurring and expressed concern about how that was going to be paid off. Then he talked about the Minnesota, for every dollar that goes in, I think we get, John, I don't know if you remember what he said, 70 cents. We are net contributors. The money we get, that we send more in as a state than we get back. And we're not going to turn down any federal dollars that come. And it's not something that you need to worry about. We will collect every dollar that we possibly can.
And Mr. Chair, if I could add just one other point.
Mr. Salta.
And that is, excuse me, in terms of the budget options and some of the information and sort of scale of how to solve a large deficit, to Representative Clark's question, I just wanted to point out some more information that is in the forecast document, and that is just pointing out sort of the year-by-year changes in portions of the budget. And housing spending, a number of other programs that all be included in the all other category. In terms of the order of magnitude, about 85% of the state budget is simply in K-12, health and human services, tax aids and credits, and higher education. The rest is largely smaller numbers and included in that. There's certainly important discussions, important considerations, and will be part of the overall solution. But I just want to help make sure that everyone's got some of the information about what's changing year by year, in case you're not thinking about forecast change, but also just help you orient the orders of magnitude and the other information that will be in the fund balance below that.
Representative Grinning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is for Commissioner Hansen. Going back to the discussion of the open process, or will there be a process, I'm especially interested in, and I think a lot of people are, the governor's plan to have education finance reform. As you know, the legislature worked with the Senate and the House and the governor's office, with Commissioner Segrin co-chairing a very comprehensive education finance reform proposal. And it actually stemmed from the governor's education finance reform task force that he started a few years ago. It was then picked up by TS Minnesota, and they kept going with it, used those principles to start out with, handed them over to the legislature, and then we bipartisanly, Senate House executive branch through Commissioner Segrin, developed what we now have been holding hearings on around the state to great acclaim. And I'm wondering, now that I've read yesterday or heard in the media that the governor's office is going to do an education finance reform proposal, is that just going to be sprung on us come January 27th, or what is the plan to actually intersect with the legislative finance committees, the education community that worked on this other proposal?
Mr. Hansen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greiling, I know you've been active. You went to, I kept getting the news articles, you went to places I never even heard of. So you, I can't imagine the gas bills you ran up. I know that you work extensively with Commissioner Segrin, and I would assume that we would, if there is common ground, we would rather have that and explore that ahead of time than just bringing it at the last minute. So I will talk with Commissioner Segrin about our conversation and let her know.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Segrin, Mr. Chair and members, and I and the governor were actually in Denver at the Education Commission of the State.
Oh, this week.
And I came home to read about this education finance reform initiative, and actually while we were there, neither one of them mentioned it to me in our, you know, conversations when we were there for 2 days. So that's what kind of gets me a little worried. So I appreciate that communication very much. Thank you.
I announced them before I forget that we will get copies of the large book made for everyone after the meeting. If you want to stop up at my office, we'll get them out to you as well. I have Representative Carlson, Kahn, and Sertis.
Mr. Chairman, a little follow-up to some of the earlier discussion. And by the way, yesterday at the briefing, I had requested some information, Commissioner, and your staff, much to my surprise, was over right away yesterday afternoon. So I thank you with some preliminary numbers. But what I would like to find out, and I'm going back to your comments about 08 and the fact that you've assigned staff to begin to review potential approaches to the resolution of the 08 problem. What do you see as the timeline in light of the legislative interest in making sure that that is an open process in terms of whatever those decisions ultimately are? When do you think that additional information will be available?
Mr. Hansen?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, I thought that the breakdown, we were going to get some more data to you yet today. That's our objective. It was easier. I saw the by-agency breakdown this morning, and I think you'll get that, and then we were endeavoring to break it down. I think you had asked for either, which I want to see as well. So we're going to break that down as well. I don't know if that, hopefully that'll get to you today or some level of it, but certainly
Mr.
by
Monday. That answers the question, and thank you.
Thank you.
I have Representative Kahn.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I thought I'd put in a little historical perspective on how budgets used to be presented, and I don't remember if this was from the late 70s or the early 80s, but it is an issue that we've had some conversation about, and that was the budgeting for information services. And there used to be, things I remember as opposed to remembering, there used to be a brown book that was presented to the legislature which had each agency's request for information services and the governor or the commissioner of finance's recommendation, and then it went from there. And I noticed when we got this, it was something that nobody played around with. They just, I think, largely because of lack of wanting to get into in-depth. And I noticed that the commissioner, either finance or the governor's recommendation, was exactly what the agency's request was, unless it extended an extra column of an extra 10, into like millions instead of thousands or something like that. And then they would clip it back so it just fit within the same column to, 900,000 or something like that. And so I did an experiment in budgeting that year where I just routinely cut every one by 30%. And then we restored them if someone screamed about it. And it was a very effective way of handling the budget of that item. There were very few people, a couple of people who screamed about it, so we gave them back what they screamed about, and no one else even seemed to notice. So, just interesting on how budgeting used to be done.
In a little historic perspective as well, we had a bill one time to cut all agencies, including the, not this current governor, but the executive governor's budget, and the biggest scream was from the agents, that particular executive branch, not this particular one. The next one is Representative Seward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to go back. I appreciate Commissioner Hansen clarifying maybe some of the governor's comments about federal assistance to Representative Clark. But I would like to seek some further clarification on the answer to Representative Earhart's question. You said that the governor said yesterday that he would propose us a budget without a tax increase. But what he went on to say was, he went on to say that he would discuss some non-tax revenue. Can you clarify and maybe define what non-tax revenue means?
Commissioner Hansen?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sertich. We haven't developed specifically. We have some thoughts, and I can talk with you about those in the coming weeks, but I don't have them solidified right now. But they're similar, if you look back to past deficits, there's some similarities to some of the thoughts.
Okay. Any other questions at all? Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this isn't really a question, but I did want to thank you for pulling us together today, and thanks to the testifiers. It is clear that, you know, Minnesota as a part of the country is facing a difficult economic time. And I think it's really important that Minnesotans have a good understanding of the scope and the definition of the problem. And this hearing today is a start of that. And, you know, from my perspective, and I heard from constituents last night, and I think it is important that we're conveying to Minnesotans so that while this is a difficult time, that it is a problem that we can deal with. And we will deal with it, you know, with seriousness and thought, but we will move Minnesota forward. And I think that's a really important message to convey to the listeners today. And again, I want to thank you very, very much for holding this hearing today.
Thank you. Commissioner, let me just emphasize one thing. And we've had a very good working relationship over the years, and I appreciate that. I think Representative Carlson and I, when we either jointly or individually ask for information, you provide as much as you can in a timely fashion. But I do want to emphasize what Representative Sturdich kind of went down that road. And that is that no idea should be dismissed by anybody at this particular point. That there are all kinds of creative people, and they work for state governments, they work for private individuals, they're CEOs and they're secretaries. They're people I meet in the grocery store that probably have an idea that is not going to be a panacea to solve the problem, but will be a part of a solution somewhere that we should not dismiss. So I really hope that we examine fully the ability of the legislature and legislative members and the committees that will be dealing with this problem to not stifle information flow at all. Sometimes information is uncomfortable for all of us to receive. I get information that I don't particularly like sometimes. But it's constituents that are concerned about a particular thing. And I think, well, that's a stupid idea. Where'd you ever come up with that? But it's their right to be able to express it to us as elected officials. And I think Representative Sturdich's line of questioning was extremely important for you guys in the agency, guys and gals, to be able to consider as we go forward. We want to be able to have open discussion, have the public be able to react to these difficult times. And so that information, from my perspective, is extremely important for us to be able to obtain. And ideas are extremely important for us to be able to obtain.
Well, so, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Sturdich, maybe to make sure we're talking about the same information, maybe we should sit down or try to figure out what it... I'm not sure we're talking about the same types of information. So, I mean, we never... I mean, we don't... When people submit fiscal notes to the Department of Management and Budget, you know, we provide whether the information is disadvantageous to the administration or not. You know, we provide you the information to you. Excuse me. And in fact, in my now almost 2 years there, I have never looked at a fiscal note before it was sent to you. So that shows you that it's not a political or any type of process. But I would love to sit down and figure out what, and you know, to make sure we're talking about the same types of information. I guess in my mind, Mr. Chair and Representative Sturdich, I was thinking that you were trying to crawl into my head and try to figure out what I'm advising the governor on, and you don't want to be there. I would love to, either ourselves or with Mr. Showalter and your fiscal staff, talk to you a little more about it to make sure we're providing the informational needs and we're actually talking about the same types of information.
You don't want to get into your head either. I know it's not Tony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. I would welcome that opportunity and accept that invitation. And to get the ball rolling, you can look forward for something on paper, kind of conceptually developed, to be coming your way from the House of Representatives shortly. Right.
Thank you.
A couple of things, members. Blue sheets are in front of you. Please sign them. You can leave them there. Staff will pick them up.
Representative Carlson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just on that point, those blue sheets, if you're on the Finance Committee, would be a part of our budget, so if you could be sure that I get those.
We'll give you even more if you want. Any other...
I'll take care of the finance.
Okay. Any other concerns? One other announcement. The fiscal policy, the law was changed that there is a subcommittee, a joint between the House and the Senate, and Representative Coles, I know, has been appointed to that. Representative myself, Representative Manchesky, and... Representative Loffler are on that subcommittee, and our goal is to re-talk about the milestones and what the agency's proposals are as far as meeting what their missions are and other goals, and we will be starting that process, I think, on the 15th, so for the agencies we'll be looking at starting to look at them and see if they match up with what the public really wants. And so we'll continue that process hopefully throughout the legislative session too as we look at budgets and see if the budget numbers or the program is really what the mission of that particular agency is or the goals are. So we can look and see to which programs are meeting those particular goals and which ones aren't, and the ones that aren't are probably ones that we should probably think about having some strong conversations about. So, just for your information, I think our first meeting is tentatively set for the 15th. There'll be additional information coming on it. Any other questions? If not, then thank you everybody for attending. We set a 2-hour meeting and we made it on time. Meeting is adjourned.